right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Kink Podcast. This is your host, Andy Nolch, the host of the Kink TV show. This has nothing to do with the TV show, though. I just thought I'd call it the same name. And this is the podcast where I talk about something for an hour. And it's usually, I don't think it's quite sort of interesting stuff. Sometimes it can be a bit random, like it goes into just... sometimes if I don't have something to talk about, it goes a bit wild because I've got to fill up the hour. And nothing on this plant is planned. It's not supposed to be special or anything. It's just me talking. It's really random, and it's just whatever I feel like doing. And during it, if you hear this noise, that's just me sipping tea. I was quite passionate about politics in the first, I've already mentioned it heaps of times, but I'll say it again, the first few podcasts or whatever, but I've already addressed all the political things I want to talk about. I'm planning in the next few months, during the summer break, in doing a world record-breaking podcast that's going to be for like 36 hours. So it's a day and a half straight of podcasting, and I've written all these topics to talk about, and I have to just go through this list of things to talk about and all these things to say, and hopefully manage to fill up 36 hours worth and stay awake the whole time. It's going to be a bit crazy. It's going to write me off, I can tell that for sure. I think the world record for the longest podcast is something like 30 hours, and so I just reckon I can get to 36, and if the record was like 50 hours or 40 or something like that, I'd be a bit worried, but the fact that the record's around 30, making 36 is possible, and someone else will probably break it, but I don't really care. But what I'm more interested in is doing a really good 36 hours worth of podcasting, and yeah, I'm going to cover heaps of things like the John Lennon assassination and lots of conspiracy theory stuff and lots of spiritual stuff and a lot of politics stuff, and it's just and just random how-to things and philosophy stuff. I'm just going to cover so many topics. I'm going to make sure that the list of things I have to talk about is really extensive and has some time put into it so that I don't just run out of stuff to talk about while I'm doing the podcast. All right, so what to talk about in this podcast. This is podcast number 10. Woo! Yay, 10. 10 weeks straight of this podcast. So that's pretty interesting, actually. 10 weeks. 3 weeks. It's 4 weeks in a month. That's over 2 months worth of doing this straight. Yep, that's good. Look, if it sounds really boring at the start, sometimes it can turn out to be pretty good. It takes a while for me to get into something to talk about. It's happened on some of them where it's the second half has been quite good. The first half I've just been like, I don't know what to talk about. But it just seems to, as I go along, it just gets worse and worse and worse, to be honest. I just run out of stuff to talk about. Oh, I feel kind of good, actually, because I got a fair few things done, a fair few, like, chores and that done, which is good, because I like to get things done. Yeah. I don't like it when there's lots of things in the around that need to get done. There's all these little things that, you know, long-term things, you know, and you do it bit by bit by bit by bit, and then you finally finish it. It's good. And so, yeah, I was feeling pretty cheerful just before we started, recording, because it's just like, yay, and then now it's just like, yeah, okay, all right, I don't know if I want to go to news, like a news thing on and start talking about the news, because it's like kind of not challenging me, but, yeah, it looks like I'm going to have to go and read out the news, because I don't really have anything at all to say. Okay, we'll go to news.com. Let's check it out. Okay. All right, this is just a thing on the news. ISIS releases plane crash video. Sorry, mate, I'm disgusted. Something about an NFL player. crazy Aussie war you didn't know about. Let's click on that. Australia, I've heard about this before. This is actually interesting and it's funny. This podcast is supposed to be funny. I put it in the comedy category. I think it's been funny, but it's a bit more political. But anyway, Australia launched an offensive against emus in the 1930s. I've heard about this before. I heard some comedians say it, and I was wondering, is that actually true? I think it actually is true. All right. Okay. When the green light was given for Australian soldiers to launch a military offensive on home soil, it was done so with haste. Reports had been flocking in that a new enemy was threatening the livelihoods of hard-working West Australians, and some needed to be done fast. And something needed to be done fast. I was going to say, what the fuck? It was 1932 and the country was still recovering from the Great Depression. The situation was desperate. This new invader left nothing in its wake. Hordes would obliterate everything in their sights. The Western Australian government, distressed by the onslaught, made a request to the Commonwealth for an immediate and serious course of action. Simply defending home soil would not be enough. Australia needed to eradicate this newfound enemy. So Defence Minister Sir George Pearce gave the go-ahead to launch a full military operation known as the Great Emu Wars. So funny. He's got the military to shoot all these emus. That's right, it's better than shooting people. Yes, that's right, emus. This was the big new threat that was destroying lives. It might sound a bit far-fetched, but even today, this native bird, which forms part of our coat of arms, still wreaks havoc across Australian farmland. But the Great Cull of 1932 wasn't a success. It was a complete failure, yet it remains etched in our history as an official act of war. That's so random. Why would it be... It's just killing emus. Like, it has nothing to do with war. The small group of soldiers from the 7th Heavy Battery Royal Australian Artillery were drafted in to take out the flightless birds. They were put under the command of Major C.W.P. Meredith, whose military strategy appeared to be to go in Rambo style. So just Rambo style shoots all these emus. It's pretty interesting. Oh, man. Oh, this one is just... Just goes on and on, this podcast, doesn't it? Just ran out of stuff to talk about. And I made it this hour. I like the idea. Trust me, something will happen. I'll get onto something, and I'll manage to fill up the hour. It's just slow to get started, but the first few podcasts, I just dived into and talk about shit for ages. All right. I just ran out of stuff to talk about. The soldiers were given Lewis machine guns and around 10,000 rounds of ammunition. Surely that would have taken them out. Apparently not. How many rounds? 10,000, okay. The team set off on November 1st, 1932, for the rich agricultural plains of the now former settlement of Campion, about 271 kilometres northeast of Perth, to begin the campaign. See, I wouldn't mind going to becoming a soldier in that if they were going to tell me, like, get me to shoot emus. I would love that. I'll get on the gun and just be like, nah, just take them all out. And, like, the emus would just, like, try and bite me and I'll just kill them. Okay, but when they arrived, they discovered it was too late to save some of the farms. Some farmers had already been driven from their properties, unable to stop the beast, which had destroyed everything in their paths. What the hell? Didn't see these killer emus. These beasts were nothing the soldiers had ever encountered before. They were tall, fast, and agile, and moved in packs. Whoa, that's crazy. Immediately they begin... Emus kind of remind me of, like, something out of, like, Jurassic Park or something, where, like, they're in packs, and they're like, ah, and they're right fast, and they're like, ah. They kind of are dinosaur-like, aren't they? All right. Immediately they began firing, yet the ferocity of the machine guns were no match for these skilled adversaries, whose numbers were estimated to be around 20,000. Fuck. This is bush with just all these emus. It's okay, I laughed at this too. They did really fire machine guns at a bunch of emus and missed. But wait, there's more. A new tactic had to be devised for the second day, an ambush. About 1,000 then have been reported moving towards a nearby dam, so the soldiers lay in wait. As daylight broke, the first wave appeared and the men opened fire. See, this is another thing where, like, if someone told me, you just wouldn't believe it. You're like, is this person telling the truth? Like, it happens to me probably once a week, and it's happened for the past 4 years, where I just hear a piece of information where my mouth just drops and goes, what the hell? It screws my sense of reality. Like, is that possible? Like, is that possible? Like, so many things. Like, one of them would be, like, the 9/11 terrorist attack, like, saying it's the government and being like, bullshit, no, it's not, or something like that. And then finding out it was corrupt people in the government of America that were wanting it to happen and stuff so that they could invade the Middle East and stuff, it seems like. And so it's just, like, so many things, your jaw just drops and goes, what, is that really real? I went to a naturopath because I had some allergy problems and I wanted to get healthier and that. And naturopath is like a doctor, but like a modern version of a doctor, like a doctor that actually is willing to try different techniques, not just subscribe a drug. Like, it seems like just medical doctors are like. But these are naturopathic doctors. And they use different techniques. They use Chinese and blah, 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 just different things and herbs and stuff and avoid drugs. They're really amazing. Like, they take a photo of your eye, and then by looking at your eye, they can tell you what's wrong with your other parts of the body because it says it in your eye. And then, you know, I've been taking these herbs and that sort of stuff, and I've already started to feel better and that. And, like, I'm waking up earlier in the morning, which is really interesting because usually I'm, like, groggy in the morning and that, and I wake up late. But this time I'm, like, waking up before the alarm, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm, like, waking... Now, finally, I'm waking up at a time that's sort of like a normal person, which is really good. I mean, all these people go to fitness thingos to get healthy at the gym and stuff, and it's just, like, that's not healthy. Getting healthy is going to a naturopathic doctor, getting on a good diet, and living a healthy lifestyle, and getting your allergy problems fixed so that you wake up at normal times. Because the naturopathic person gets you to take herbs to help you with the digestive system and all these things. So they spot what's wrong and then they give you things to solve those things that are wrong. It's just, I could just go to the gym for ages and, yeah, I could build a bigger bicep, but I wouldn't consider that healthy. Like, I'd still have allergy problems or stomach problems and all this sort of stuff. But, yeah, I could run 100 kilometres and not be as puffed. Like, it's just, all these people are just obsessed with health, and it's just, you know, it's not just about fitness, it's about all these other things. Being healthy is about, like, practicing meditation as well. And, yeah, anyway. Cause that's just healthy for your mind. It just gives you a break and a rest. And, yeah, recharges your energy levels and that. So the naturopath was testing me for allergies. So she put samples of different substances just in my hand, just sitting in my palm. So I didn't swallow them or anything, take them to my body. I just put them in my hand. And then she gets you to push up against her hand with your other hand, like, and she tests the strength of it. And so she put all these different substances in, and, yeah, my hand was strong. And then one of them she put in, which was vitamin C, suddenly my hand was weak. And it was really amazing. And she was like, I was like, whoa, what the hell? And, like, because having this vitamin C, I'm like, I got a problem with it. And you have to see it to believe it, that you just have a sample of something in your hand and then suddenly you can't, your left arm is not as strong. It's just bizarre. It's so unusual. And she said she's had really strong muscle people and that do it. And when they come across something that they're allergic to as well, they're still weak no matter how strong they are in the gym. They're still weak. And that's why it's like, yeah, you want to get good strong at the gym. You want to get strong. It's just like, get healthy and handle the allergy problems and all these sorts of things. And then, because imagine every day in life whenever I was eating a vitamin C food and then I'll go and do something and then I'll be weaker because I'd had the vitamin C food. How interesting is that? And it's like, and that was just having a substance in my hand, so I didn't even need to swallow it. So if you were near a packet of vitamin C pills, or for someone else it could be gum tree leaves, for example, would be their allergy or whatever. And so, you know, they could be around gum trees and it could be worse at blah, blah, blah. See, my idea of people who are really good at sport, they probably, these are people who are healthy and probably have less allergies than other people. You know what I mean? Because they're not just fucked up. You know what I mean? They don't have things wrong with them. You know, they're fresh, they're bright, they're healthy, they're strong. And someone who's like some sort of weak nerd who isn't good at doing things and that, they probably have all these allergies and all that sort of stuff. And I've heard that stereotype of people with glasses and they've got the allergies and there's a bit of that stereotype nerdy sort of person and they have allergies at the same time. It's just interesting, you know. It's like you take your car for a service like every year. It's like you need to take your body for a service every year. You know what I mean? Like that's what I think you need to do, and you need to look after your body just the same way as you look at your car. Except, you know, you pop the bonnet on your car, but in your body you don't pop your bonnet. You just go to a doctor and they give some tests or whatever, and you find out what you need. But I've been to doctors, medical doctors about things that I've had problems with in the past, and they wouldn't be able to come up with anything really to solve the problems and that. And they would just say, nah, you're healthy and that. So it's kind of good to go to the naturopath and have them say, nah, you got a problem with this. It'll be like, yeah, good, I thought there was something wrong with me. Yeah. So I had a problem with vitamin C, so that's so interesting. Just my jaw just dropped when I saw how I had the problem with it. And I even felt uncomfortable when I put the vitamin C in my hand. It was just really, really interesting. See, that's something that my jaw would drop and go, no way, no way. Just putting that substance into my hand has totally changed the strength of my other hand. That's so bizarre. I can't believe that. What? It's just amazing, you know? And then we went and put another substance in, a different one, and then suddenly my hand was strong again. She was like, see, look. And it's just like, I think she was a bit excited as well when I was doing it. She found it funny how amazed by it I was. She would probably be used to it, but it's just you're not used to get this sort of stuff at doctors, like seeing amazing things and people to read your eyes and tell what's wrong with your health by reading your eyes, which is what she did. She said some things about, after looking at the picture of my eye, she said some things about me that... were true, and it was like, yeah, wow. So yeah, they're the shit. They're definitely the way of the future, these naturopathic doctors. They're they're just more advanced. Of you know, anyway. So ectofacto. I'm just saying, everyone should go. I reckon everyone should go to one. You just get a checkup, just see if there's anything wrong with you. Somebody might have an allergy their whole life. They don't even realize it. Like they might have a problem with peanuts or something their whole life, and then just feel a bit groggy after it. But they never really put two and two together that it was the peanuts that made them feel groggy after they ate. It's kind of hard, you know, especially vitamin C. Because I was taking vitamins to get healthy, and then so. I kind of shouldn't have been taking them to be honest, because the vitamin C wasn't helping me. It's just ridiculous. Sometimes it's hard, really hard to spot what is wrong. Like, I had a little bit of hay fever, right? It only got bad this year, that's why I went to the naturopath. But in the past, I had hay fever, but it was such mild cases of it, and the symptoms are a little bit similar to having a cold, right? So. For years, you can just get away with not doing anything about it, especially someone like me who's just like, oh, fuck it, I'll be fine, you know what I mean? Or there's nothing wrong with me, like not wanting to have anything wrong with me, you know? And then, you know, to find out that it's just like, yeah, you've had this problem for years, but you just hadn't quite been diagnosed, but you just, if you'd only taken your car for a servicing, you're only taking your body for a servicing years and years ago to a naturopath. See, now I know, like if I had a little kid, I'll... take my little kid to a naturopath, you know what I mean? So that's my little criticism of my parents not taking me to a naturopath. But yeah, the jaw-dropping things were just things where you just go, what the hell? Like, you have to see it to believe it. She just puts a substance in my hand and my other hand goes weak. It's just bizarre. And she goes, yeah, because we are an energy field. You can't see it. You just see... hands and arms when you look at yourself or whatever, but we are like an energy field, and that substance going to my energy field screws it up, and it's not quite right. See, the thing is, there's all these things going on that you can't see, and scientists and that And a lot of scientists are onto what's going on now with things you can't see. But some scientists are real stubborn and saying, no, if you can't see it, it's not there. But there seems to be all these things out there that you just can't see. Like, you can't see your Wi-Fi internet connection, can you? You can't see your mobile phone when it's being used, can you? You can't see this energy field that apparently gets stuffed up when I have vitamin C in there. You can't see that. You can't see your body's energy field. You can't see ghosts. Some people can see ghosts, like some psychics and that. It's like it's proven, man. They can see ghosts and talk to them and shit. Or they can definitely talk to them, but I can't see them. I can, you know, I don't see, I don't know what they see. I just see a table and chair and a wall right now, you know. But some people can see ghosts and that. And I think sometimes those ghosts hang around people who can see them because those people are the only people who can see them, you know, and because it's good to get recognised if you're a ghost. No one else can see you. But, it's really interesting. It's really interesting, this amount of jaw-dropping things that go on. Coast to Coast AM is a great radio station. Just the things that people say on that are just amazing. People call up and tell their stories and stuff, and well, about seeing ghosts and all these sort of things, and it definitely seems like it's happening. So I saw, I'm going to finish reading this article, but I go off on things. I saw this thing with Russell Brand, and he was cause kind of making fun of Donald Trump or whatever, because Donald Trump was saying how they should build a wall and stuff, and he was just being silly, and I don't know, like, Donald Trump seems really good. Like, I think he seems, like, really A to B and simple and, like, direct and honest, and I think he's a successful businessman, and he's a bit of a cocky person. You can just see, it's pretty obvious, like, he loves himself, but it's not in a bad way. Like, he seems like he's genuinely nice, and he's got, I think, a good family and stuff, and but Russell Brand was kind of have it going and make him silly. Like, you know, comedians always mock people and make fun of them and that. And so, yeah, I kind of didn't, because I like Russell Brand, but I was kind of just like, you know, I think Donald Trump will make a great president, and he's just putting down Donald Trump. And I saw this little thing on the internet, which was a video, and it was asking for people's opinions on things, and it had, I think they were young people, of course. Because, sorry, I don't mean to bag young people, but seriously, I mean, firstly, I don't think the average person is anywhere near as educated as they should be, or smart, or switched on, or know about what's going on. You know what I mean? I totally think that they're just like, they don't have the right hobbies, if you know what I mean. I think you need to have hobbies of improving yourself and being switched on to what's going on. But I mean, I think back to when I was 19 years old, it was just like, I just knew nothing. Like, I was just so dumb, like, just so, and I was even, at that age, I was even smarter than the average person, but I was just chronically, I would, compared to what I am now, I would just say I'm full-blown retarded, like, just so dumb, and just unaware at all as to what's going on in the world. See, because the thing is, what's going on in the world is so wild, the people just don't believe it, and they think you're crazy if you actually told them what you understand about the world and what you think's going on. Like, if you say, yeah, I believe that there's aliens and there's this 9/11 was a conspiracy, and, you know, if you say this thing, they think you're crazy, but you're not. It's just what's going on. This world is amazing. Like, it is amazing that the lady puts vitamin C in your hand and your left hand suddenly is weak and can't lift it. That's amazing. It wasn't even in my body. And it's just a substance, vitamin C, which I've been eating my whole life or whatever. And suddenly my left hand's weakened, and I was just like, what the hell? Like, this is just bizarre. People see ghosts and talk to them. What the hell? You know, and it's not bullshit. Like, see, the CIA has, like, done full-on scientific experiments with people who can mind read and all these things, and it's been proven correct. Hypnotism. You can take someone, hypnotize them, say to them, you know, every time I bark, I want you to bark as well, and then you click your fingers and you bark, and then they go bark, and they bark back, and then you go bark, and they go bark, and bark back, and they have no idea that they've been told to do that, and they don't know why they're barking. That, to me, is jaw-dropping, unbelievably amazing, and I can't describe how amazing it is. This is just like, what the hell? And over the past 4 years, nearly, maybe once a week or almost even once a day. Once a day, there's always a mini what the hell. But once a week, there's always a what the hell. Things of what the hell. You can bend a spoon with your mind. Yes, you can bend a spoon with your mind. What the hell? You know? Next one. You know? Some people have... Lots of people have near-death experiences. And they look towards the light. They see this light thing that people suppose is heaven. And they look towards it. And heaps of people who have near-death experiences, like die and then come back alive again, see this light. You know, is that heaven? You know? Are people just making heaven up? No. There's some dudes out there, right, who claim that they've been taken by God or Jesus or something into hell, actually seen how horrible hell is, because they weren't that passionate about religion, and now they've come back, and now they're going around trying to help people and trying to get people as the meaning of their life, trying to help people to do right so they don't go in hell because they've actually experienced hell, and they say it's really horrible, and that's why God or Jesus gave them a tour of hell, you know, and the person like isn't just making up, isn't just high on drugs or whatever, and I mean, this is just absolutely amazing. There's everyone who apparently, if you take LSD or DMT or these psychedelic drugs, it's not like you just suddenly go into dreamland. We all see specific things. Like if you take this substance, you'll see pixies. I mean, how random is that? It'll be understandable, and it'll be like, oh, what's, because there's the thing, other dimensions. Scientists talk about other dimensions. Maybe heaven's another dimension. Maybe hell's another dimension. You know what I mean? Scientists say that there's other dimensions. And see, we're tuned into this dimension now, but those psychic people who can see dead people, they're tuned into another dimension at the same time as this dimension. Like they've got two radio play stations going at the same time. You know what I mean? And so there might be a hell dimension, another dimension. You just got to tune. Somehow these people just born able to tune into another dimension, and I can't tune into another dimension. All I see is what's going on here. You know, at least that's good. At least you don't go crazy and everything seems quite straightforward. But in a way, it's really boring. But anyway, why is it that all crazy people say they hear voices? You know what I mean? I mean, it's a thing that they hear voices, you know, talking to them. You know, like, why is that? Do you reckon maybe they're actually hearing voices from another dimension or something? Anyway, I saw this thing, yeah, on LSD. Terence McKenna is this guy that experimented with LSD and DMT and stuff. Anyway, apparently when you take it, you always see pixies. Now, look, if drugs just sent you into dreamland, right, and it was all just made up out of your imagination, that's fair enough, okay? But if everyone takes this substance and they always see pixies, what the hell is going on? That is wild. Why is everyone always seeing pixies and having the same hallucination of pixies? I mean, the thing is, and you might say, oh, well, maybe it trips little kids' memories and little kids remember pixies, but it's just like, what about all the other little things, all the other cartoons you see when you're a little kid and that sort of stuff, and they're just all ignored and everything goes pixies? What the hell? You know? And it's this Terence McKenna guy reckons it's sending you, these other things send you to another dimension and let you communicate with aliens or something. They're just somewhere else. And, I don't know, it just seems so, so interesting. Well, years ago, my family did this TV show pilot thing that was, like, going to be, like, a reality show of where, there was a family with problems, and then a psychologist would come in, live with them for a week, and then sort out their problems, and then it would be like, oh, happy family, and the psychologist would leave. Kind of like that nanny show that was on years ago. So we did that, and he came here, and we filmed a few things. And what he did was, one of the first things he did is he got us to draw a picture and include a few things in it, like a lake, a house, blah, blah, blah. So we all drew the picture, and we all drew the picture differently, as you expect. And then by looking at the picture, he could analyze what type of personality we had. And he looked at it, and he goes to my brother, you're blah, 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 to my sister, you're blah, 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 to me, you're blah, blah, blah. And he was right. And he wasn't just saying generic things that we could, you know, anyone could be right. Like, he was specifically spot on. And he said, yeah, people who draw the big snake tend to be hornier people, basically. And he goes, people who draw the house in the middle of the page tend to blah, blah. People who put the lake here at this size tend to have problems with their dad. People who draw windows, it means blah, 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 blah. And he was actually right, and it was just like jaw-dropping as to what the fuck. You know what I mean? What the hell? So you're telling me if someone draws the snake small, they're not as horny and they've got problems, like sexually or some shit, and if they draw a snake big, they tend to be hornier and more affectionate or some shit. And then, like, that's scientifically proven. And then if somebody draws a house in the middle of the page, it means they're obsessed with themselves. And if they draw it in the corner, it means they don't care that much about themselves. And if they draw a lake, a large lake, it means they've got mummy issues or some shit. What the fuck? I mean, sorry for swearing, but it's just like, to me, that's just amazing. Because he was right. It was just like, why is it that people, you know, who have daddy issues draw the house, the lake bigger? What the hell? What? I would have thought it would be completely random. You take a bunch of people, get them to draw blah, 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 blah. And I would say, you know what I'd say? I'd say people who draw things smaller are probably more shy and introverted. And I imagine they'll draw like a little neat house and the snake would be little and that. And I'd say, yeah, that makes sense. A small person would draw a bit smaller. And then the person who's like really confident and stuff, I imagine they could buy a big house and a big lake and a big snake. You know what I mean? That kind of makes sense. I can see that. But the other points are just totally out of that range. And just like, how the hell did he know that? How is that going on? How is it that people do this? What the F is going on? It's jaw dropping. It's just like, this is amazing. Yeah, so I just think it's totally like, what the hell? So, yeah, everything's just amazing. Really, I don't know what I was going on to, but, yeah, the LSD thing is just like, people take it and they see the same things and stuff, and it's just like, what the hell? Yeah. If it weren't for me wanting to be healthy and also knowing that there's some spiritual things I could do in order to see really cool things like pixies and stuff, or something like that maybe, I would totally be taking LSD and those other things. I would totally be taking them and going on these journeys and seeing what they're like, because this Terence McKenna guy reckons they're fantastic, and the high only lasts like 3 minutes or something, but it's just so mind blowing what you see on them. And one time I did take mushrooms, and like the whole world sort of seemed like it was plastic, and it was really interesting. It was just like, whoa. And it was funny as well. I was giggling a lot. But that was so cool, just to see everything as being plastic. You know what I mean? That was when I took it, I was like, this is way better than marijuana. Why does anyone smoke marijuana? Because I've never been a fan of marijuana. I just reckon it makes you feel tired. Just like, dopey, you just like, but like, I guess some people make them feel good, but for me it was just like, anyway, I was just like, why would anyone take anything but these mushrooms? These are sick. You take them and you just go, whoa. It's just like going to video game world and going, you know. But yeah, then I don't think they're good for you, so. But apparently this Terence McKenna guy reckons that they're not like bad for you or anything, you know, like. He reckons they're not addictive, psychedelics. It's like drugs like ice and cocaine are the bad ones and stuff because they're addictive and that, and they really wreck you. But apparently you take a bit of LSD or something like that. Like, I think some people can really screw up even just taking it once. I think it's risky, that's the thing, but other people can just take it every now and then and never get addicted to it and just go on these amazing journeys and stuff. And anyway, DMT's one of these things, and apparently it's a chemical that the brain releases when you die. And so when you take it, it's kind of like when you're alive, it simulates what it's like to die. And it's just like, whoa. Amazing. Really. Amazing. Too bad I can't try it. And I don't recommend anyone to try it, but there's other things you can do. I'm not going to say what, but there's other things you can do. Keep on looking that apparently are amazing and just blow your mind and stuff. But I don't know about you, but I just like the, I reckon they'll just be so cool right now just for 5 minutes to just go off. Like, apparently, you take it, you go high for 3 minutes and you go off or whatever, but it doesn't feel like 3 minutes. Your whole sense of time completely changes. It's just like, that to me sounds so cool, you know? Like, you know, you have all those things where you're like, you go, an hour of time passes by and you're like, whoa, that was quick, or an hour of time passes by and you go, whoa, that took ages. That's kind of cool, a little bit, because it's a bit different. But it's just like, imagine if, you know, it was a huge difference. You just were like, what the hell? That to me is cool. I like going on a journey, you know? I like traveling. Barely have a chance to. But, okay, so here's this article. We're going to continue. Okay. So the soldiers, it says here, about 1,000 of them, the emus, had been reported moving towards a nearby dam. So the soldiers lay in wait. As daylight broke, the first wave appeared and the men opened fire. It's just crazy. Emus are just running people out of their homes. But despite unloading hundreds of bullets, the soldiers only managed to kill less than a dozen of their feathered foes. According to a report from the Sunday Herald, which no longer exists, the emus had a 6-foot leader who would keep lookout. What the hell? See, again, this is just a pack of emus in the bush taking on soldiers and a 6-foot... well, they're all sort of tall emus anyway, but a 6-foot-high leader that, like, would have a lookout. So one looks out and the rest of the emus... Oh, another thing that's just jaw-dropping. Kangaroos, right, just from the bush. If you set a dog onto them, the dog will try and attack them over. The kangaroos take the dog on, try and take it into water and try and drown the dog in water. That, to me, is fucking mind-blowing. That the kangaroo knows that you can grab a dog, put its head underwater and drown it and kill it. And that's what the kangaroo tries to do. I mean, that's unbelievable. It's just like, what the hell is going on? It just, I just think that's amazing. I just think it's amazing a kangaroo can have a dog come at it and then it just cleverly leads the dog to the water and then tries to drown it in the water. It's just bizarre. And the dog meanwhile is going, oh, the kangaroo's trying to drown it. You can look up videos of it on the internet. It's, see, if someone told me that kangaroo would be trained specifically to do that, it was like, if it was like a circus kangaroo or some shit, that would be understandable. But the kangaroo has been trained to do this. The kangaroos just know somehow how to do this, to go and drown dogs. I mean, what the... That, to me, is amazing. And kangaroos box when they fight. I mean, to me, I just would have thought... When I heard about it, I just thought it was a joke. But kangaroos, when they fight each other, they box and they kick. And it's literally almost not that different to watching humans fight, if they were going to get into a human fight. And the kangaroo's like this fighting over the female, and they're like... Arr! And they're just like... Amazing, you know, it's just interesting. All right. And also, there have been times when I've heard my cats, when something is bad is going on, they go, help! I swear they've even said help. Like, they go, you know, they go, meow. But they don't go, meow. When they're in real distress, I've heard them go, or something like that. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I've heard, it sounds like they're saying help or something. Anyway, it's just bizarre. I mean, I've also seen some funny tricks where they show dogs. Dogs have been, like, trained to sing. And so the song comes on and the dogs are like, and the dog's trying to talk and sing along with it. It's so funny. Anyway. Animals are really like little people. Anyway, if you treat animals, it's really interesting. If you treat animals like humans, like with respect and stuff, they start behaving themselves. When you treat them like a prick, I think you piss them off and they start being like smart asses back and they shit in the house and that sort of stuff. But if you actually treat them nice, it's interesting they change. Okay. According to... Blah, blah, yes, look out to alert the others when the gun-toting soldiers approach. So one of these emus would alert them when the gunman would approach. So random. The story was the same for the next few days, with the emus managing to outsmart their human opponents with minimal casualties. The hell. After 9 days and very little success. See, how do you expect our army... See, wars are just... You really got to avoid them. Because it's just, they just end up being wild. Confrontations and stuff, like violence and stuff. You got to try all the peaceful ways and then maybe then go to war. But don't just go to war quickly. Like, if you, like, for example, you have problems with your neighbor, right? You try and sort out all the ways. You don't just quickly go to chucking eggs at their house. Because it's like, once you started chucking the eggs at their house, then, whoa, you've got engaged in a war and it might be chucking eggs for years and it might just, it just keeps on going because no one gives up. You know what I mean? It's just, it's kind of, you want to avoid it. Because shit just goes wild and suddenly you just got to do anything because it's just battle time, desperateness, and you got to blah, 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 fight. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? Like, let's say you have a fight with a neighbor and you're like, blah, blah, disagreement. And then if you just cut quickly to, I'm going to fucking chuck eggs at your house. And then you chuck them. And then they'll be like, I'm going to chuck eggs at his house. And he chucks them. And then you go, that's not going to chuck eggs. You know, what are you going to do then? They've egged your house. And then you'll do something even higher. You go, I'll blow up their car. And then you go, I'll do blah, blah, blah. And it just reads, it ends up just being all this violence and destruction. It just ends with both parties losing. You know, that's basically what happens in the war. Both parties just completely get screwed up. Either way, I'm saying with direct confrontation, either way you lose. You know what I mean? Because you die, or people die, or bad stuff happens, so you got to really avoid it. Anyway, so these Australian soldiers couldn't even take on emus, let alone another country in war. I mean, what the hell, you know? Can't even kill emus. How do you expect... It's just pathetic. How do you expect them to, you know, win a war? It's just ridiculous. After 9 days and very little success, the emu offensive was called off, much to the despair of struggling farmers, but to the amusement of the rest of the country. The Herald Sun... Oh, another thing where you just jaw drops and go, what the hell? Firstly, okay, Mexico City. Mexico, I thought Mexico would be just fucking... Well, sorry for swearing so much, but anyway. That's the interesting thing of this podcast. There's a lot of the F words. No, a lot of F words tonight. And usually it's not. I usually kind of keep it quite squeaky clean. Talk about really weird things, but keep it quite PG. Anyway, I think of Mexico as being this really dry place, dry hot place, and Mexico City as being this really, really big city with just so many people, really dry hot, and really cheap looking and crime-ridden and really dry and hot. Anyway, so then that's interesting information about Mexico City. It's on a mountain, like a huge mountain. It's not like on the peak of a mountain, so it's not in the shape of a triangle or anything. Like, it's on a huge mountain range, but a flat area, right? Really, like, over 2,000 meters high, so it's high up, right? So it's actually, the weather's a lot cooler, so it's not hot there, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it snows there or anything, but it's not hot there. You know, whereas I would have thought the whole of Mexico, and also gets a bit of rain and stuff. So that just blew my mind when I found that out today. I was just like, what the hell? Like, Mexico's not hot. Mexico City's not hot. Like, I thought it was just a really hot, dry city in the desert and stuff. That kind of screwed my reality on things. And then the fact that it was in a mountain, and then also looked at photos of it, and the city kind of looked not too different to a normal city. It didn't look as cheap and run down as what I thought it would look. It kind of looks like a normal city, but it's just weird. You just got to think. One day you can think something about something, and then the next day you can totally think different and be like, what the hell? I've always thought it was like this, and then, nah, it's like this. What? It's really interesting, you know? But, yeah, like, I knew Mexico would have had some tropical areas, and I would have thought, oh, down south, some of it's tropical, but it seems like a lot of Mexico is tropical. And also, they have some giant mountains in Mexico and that, and they have snow on top of them and stuff, and it's just like, I never would have thought there'd be really any place in Mexico would have snow. I just thought it was this huge, dry continent, like, really hot. Huge, dry country and really hot. It's just so interesting. Now, sometimes someone can say something, and you're like, no, it's not like that, and they go, yeah, look, and you're like, whoa, Well, I think what I'm trying to say is don't ever be, like, stuck thinking something is a certain way. And don't be open to... Have an open mind, because, like, it's really interesting what you find out if you've got an open mind. Find out what's going on. It's different. Sometimes it's very different to what you think. The Sunday Herald reported years later in July 1953 that Major Meredith found the emus almost impossible to defeat. If we had a military division with the bullet-carrying capacity of these birds, it would face any army in the world. Hold on. If we had a military division with the bullet-carrying capacity of these birds, it would face any army in the world, he was quoted as saying. I don't know what that means. They can face machine guns with the invulnerability of tanks. They are like the Zulus, whom even dumb bullets could not stop. I understand how emus would be hard to hit because they're fast and they're bouncing, they shoot around, and so like, but still, come on. Is it just me or that first sentence shouldn't make any sense? Let's read it again. If we had a military division with the bullet carrying capacity of these birds, it would face any army in the world. So I think it means if we had a military division that can shoot these birds and actually has a capacity to kill these birds, then you could just take on any... If you had a military division that can take on these birds, you can take on any army in the world and you win. I think that's what he's trying to say, but the wording of it is just terrible. They can face machine guns with the invulnerability of tanks. So they're kind of like they're not worried about getting... They're not vulnerable, you know? Invulnerability. Let me see what the... I just want to check something. I want to check how... Invulnerability. It's a hard word to say. Okay, let's see how this pronounces it. Ready?
Invulnerability.
It just sounds retarded. Invulnerability. It sounds like a word like you sort of made up when you're drunk. All right. Yeah, they're like, these birds are like tanks. I mean, how interesting is that? They are like Zulus, whom even dumb bullets could not stop. They're like Zulus, whom even dumb, Zulus is probably some Greek god or some shit. No, they're native people in South Africa. They're like the Zulus, whom even dumb bullets could not stop. So they couldn't stop the native people, and what are dumb bullets? Dumbs. Okay, so it's the type of bullet that expands when it hits someone or something. Okay, see how trying to understand that paragraph, what they're trying to say is just you have to look things up and stuff and trying to get the idea. The paper also quoted another... So reading isn't easy. It's just... Especially when people say stupid sentences like that are hard, kind of hard to understand. And then they use words like Zulus and dumb bullets. Like, I mean, okay, fair enough. Because back in the 50s, you probably know what those things are. And these are probably military, so you know what dumb bullets are. Anyway, people don't express themselves well these days. They write things in complicated ways and... People need to be a lot more simple. The paper also quoted another emu hunter saying, "There's only one way to kill an emu. Shoot him through the back of the head when his mouth is closed, or through the front of his mouth when his mouth is open. That's how hard it is." What the hell? See, this is another moment where you're just like, I would have thought you just shoot the emu's body and they die. You know what I mean? Where this is saying, you know, you can't... this is saying that you have to shoot in a specific way in order to kill an emu. What the hell? There's only one way to kill an emu. See, another thing where you... I mean, I don't know if this is totally true, but this might turn out to be totally true, but a lot of these things that I've just looked into. I'm just easily believing. I don't believe things easily. You got here, mega skeptic here. I really look into things, and before I say, you know, aliens exist, you know, there's a lot of things that I've seen before I say that, you know. So don't just think of some gullible idiot who just believes everything you read on the internet, because you have any wacky thing on the internet. And if you think some of the conspiracies are wacky, theories are wacky, yeah, because some of them are implanted there on purpose in order to make people think the conspiracy theories are ridiculous, right? Let's say you're doing something illegal, right? You're doing some conspiracy thing like 9/11, right? You go out there, right, and you start writing up some things like, you pretend like you're a conspiracy theorist, and you go, "Oh, 9/11 was done by the government because of blah blah blah," and you make up the most ridiculous story ever, and you spread it on the internet hard, and then people go on the internet and they go, "Look how ridiculous this theory is. Conspiracy theories therefore are ridiculous." You know what I mean? And it confuses everyone, and then they think you're an idiot. So people are clever, you know what I mean? Evil people are clever, and they do this to hide what they're doing, you know? Like, yeah, so or they come up with a new conspiracy theory. Like, they write up and they go, people with plastic knives and fours are fucking elephants because of the weather, and they're trying to manipulate the weather and make money in carbon taxes. And they come up with some ridiculous thing, and then they come up with another ridiculous thing on a totally another topic and another really ridiculous thing, and it's called Operation Attack Conspiracy Theories. And then all of a sudden these things spread, and then they're mixed amongst legitimate conspiracy theories, which are hard enough to believe it is, and then crazy conspiracy theories, and then everyone goes, average person goes on and comes across them and goes, "Well, these conspiracy theories are whack. They're bullshit." And it's just like, no, that's a psyop. It's called a psychological operation. It's like an operation to change people's minds and trick them, you know? And it's just like, don't think that some of these conspiracy theories are intentionally spread and actually fake and have been put there to just distract from the real thing. That's how much is going on in this world, how wild it is. Apparently Google can, like, turn on computers and watch people and listen to them, record them and stuff. You know what I mean? And Alex Jones, like, went to Google and was like, "Hey, why are you guys recording us off a laptop?" And got in their face and stuff, and got kicked out for using his camera. And he was like, "But you're filming us all the time on our laptops." And he's still like, he's not making up. This world is amazing and wild, and what the hell is going on? And it's whacked. So, yeah, back to the whole, another jaw-dropping moment of this. So, with this emu story, I'm just using this as an example from some of the things I know that are totally true. You read them, you go, "What the hell? I never would have thought that's possible," and it turns out that they're true. Okay, I'm not going to bother looking into this emu thing. I think it's probably true, but, like, this is an example. If you read a sentence and you go, "What the hell?" but then it's actually true. There's only one way to kill an emu. Shoot him through the back of the head when his mouth is closed, or through the front of his mouth when his mouth is open. That's hard to do. I mean, what the hell? That's the only, like he's saying, the emu shoot a guy, one of these army guys were trying to kill the emus. That's how you kill them. What, you can't just shoot the emu's stomach, their body? What the hell? It's that hard to kill an emu? And it sounds like it is. That's just wild. That's interesting, you know what I mean? And then this turns out to be true. It'll be another moment where if you said to me, it was like a question on who wants to be a millionaire, what is the only, is it true, the true or false, you know, is it true that this is the only way to kill an emu? I'll go, no. You know, is it true that aliens exist years ago? And I might have chosen no. And is it true that 9/11 was conspiracy and years ago? I would have chosen no, you know. And then it turns out that they're true and you're like, what the F? It's amazing. All right. I'm starting to think of this, doing this world record podcast and in the next few months and just thinking, oh no, you know. Like, I might just absolutely, I just don't know if I'll be able to keep up with it. Like, I think it's going to be epic. I definitely want a fair few guests to come in, and when the guests are on, they can just talk and I'll just listen to them. That'll help keep the 36 hours going. But I just feel like that I could possibly, yeah, talk for that long if I have enough topics to go on about. But then I could just end up carking it during it. Like, an hour is kind of hard enough as it is, you know. I could see myself doing an hour and a half. An hour and a half is kind of, I don't find it too hard, an hour and a half. But outside of that, 36 hours, that's just going to be wild. It's just going to have so many pauses. Because if I get excited, I'm going to let myself get excited. But just, I don't know, just hopefully I can just, I'm going to have like food next to me and everything. And just 36 hours. Staying awake for 24 hours is totally possible. That's, but once you pass the 24 hours straight of being awake, you really start carking it. And I reckon 24 hours is, of awakeness is extremely hard to do, of talking on a podcast, and then just to push it up to having your last 12 hours just totally written off, tired, and already spoken about things for ages. I definitely won't feel like doing it, I reckon, but I think the excitement of breaking a world record and at least, you know, one claim to fame, because someone else will break it in the future for sure, but at least you better say one day, you know, Andy Nolte for a certain period of time actually had the world record for the longest podcast. That would just be cool to say, hey, it'd just be like, you're like, I achieved something with my life. But more than anything, I want it to be interesting. That's what I'm more concerned about, because I don't want it to be absolutely horrible, because that would just be really bad. Okay, then it says, you know, I'll finish this email article because the hour's nearly up. An article on November 10th, 1932, in the now-defunct newspaper, The Argus, wrote those in the Campion district were alarmed at the Defence Department's decision to recall the Machine Gun Party, which had been eradicating the emu pest. The settlers state that after overcoming preliminary difficulties, the gun party had begun to make an impression on the ravaging hordes, the report says. The decision also became a source of ridicule in Parliament, with Sir George being labelled the Minister for the Emu War. I would really like to go out there and be a soldier and shoot emus. That would be fun, I reckon. And if, you know, like, I don't think you should torch animals, but I just want to do one clean shot and just knock the emu out and just end it fast so it doesn't need any pain or anything. But I just reckon it would be so cool to knock off all these emus. Despite the mockery, Pierce crumbled to the pleas of the farmers and ordered another offensive against the flightless birds 2 days after he cancelled it. Yeah, emus are funny, like these giant retarded birds that can't fly. The group was recalled and sent back to the sweltering settlement of Campion. Oh, it's this hot desert and they're taking on emus. It had been revealed the first operation managed to kill 300 birds, but there were still thousands more which wreaked havoc across the farming community. Do you know what? This is random. So they managed to kill 300 birds. That's cool. And the emus still causing problems. But anyway, on another topic, heat, I don't know about for you, but for me, heat really slows down work. It really does. Like, I find that if it's above 20 degrees, it starts to just, the amount of work you can do, like physical work, just decreases more and more and more, and you're just exhausted more. And then when it's below 20 degrees, ideally like 15 degrees, you can just really do stuff and work. I just find I work much better, whereas just the hotter it gets, just the tighter and slower I get. And you, on really hot days, you just have naps and stuff. You see it on cats. You see cats when it gets really hot, they just pass out and just nap. And you see cats in these tropical areas like Thailand and that, the cats are just like in little shops, just passed out. Like, they're so, I don't know, heat's just really, you know, unproductive temperature. I think if it was, ideally, I think if everything was 15 degrees all the time and we just get used to it, wouldn't feel cold, just wear pants and a jacket and T-shirt. And when you're working, you can wear a T-shirt or whatever. You could get a lot done, but it's like when it gets above 20 and more and more and more. I think even if you get used to the temperatures, maybe it takes a long time to get used to it. Maybe you can get really used to 30 degrees and be fine. But I just find that, yeah, because today what happened was I was doing something physical work, and it was above 20, and then the temperature changed, and then an hour later it was like 10 degrees less, and I was like, whoa, I'm no longer exhausted and feeling horrible and wanting to die. You know what I mean? Like, and I was able to just work, and it's just like so, just changed to be so different. Anyway, the hour's up. I've got to finish this article. All right. So Major Meredith and his troops opened fire once again, killing around 40 on November 13, 1932. That's 40 emus. By the time December rolled around, the team were killing around 100 emus per week. Can't believe you deploy military people to get emus. They can only get 100 a week, and that was after all this practice. However, the mission eventually came to an end on December 10, 1932. According to reports, Major Meredith claimed they killed 986 emus, which is 9,860 rounds. He also... Sorry, let's look up rounds. Is round bullets? Checking the dictionary now. So you got to look up these things when you're reading. You know, rounds isn't specific enough. It's just one shot. The amount of ammunition needed to fire one shot, a round. It's just one shot. So they didn't have too many bullets, though. 986 bullets isn't enough. So they obviously weren't just going... They weren't wasting their bullets. They were being very... They were saving them. It's probably why they're having problems hitting them, but still, they're not doing that good enough. Emus must be really hard to shoot. You know, you tell wacky people, like, oh, they rode kangaroos to work in Australia, which, you know, isn't true, but then you just say stuff like, yeah, they had, like, a war with the emus, and, you know, people go, what the hell, they don't believe it, but things like it's true. Alright, he also claimed 2,500 birds had died as a result of injuries they had sustained from the offensive. Despite the kills, the emus remained a problem in the Midwest. It's funny, because there's a Midwest in America, there's a Midwest in Australia as well. But the Midwest in Australia is actually interesting, because that's like the least inhabited like place in the world, you know, and it's just absolutely just nothing there. Farmers tried numerous ways to try to stop emus from ravaging their crops. It would take, I wonder what the emus like to eat. It would take another 20 years before the West Australian government would embark on another ambitious project, an emu-proof fence. Costing £52,000, a 217-kilometre fence, which is 4 foot 10 high, was joined to the rabbit fences across the states. To build these rabbit fences and emu fences to stop all these 270 kilometres is kind of far. Since then, successive governments have had to deal with problematic emus. And aren't emus... Let me just look it up. Emus, they're an Australian bird. So they're native, but yet they're still causing problems. Because in Australia, we're used to foreign... animals coming here like rabbits and going wild and stuffing things up. But this is a native bird here just causing problems. And we have problems with kangaroos, which are native as well. Because all these environments are like, oh, native. And lots of people are like, oh, these foreigner things, yeah, I hate the foreign animals, kill them or whatever. And it's just like the native animals are problematic as well. It's just, I don't know, people, I don't think it's good to hurt animals or kill them. But some people just have so much a problem with killing animals. You know what I mean? I think that they need a bit of help with that, you know, and stop being as... concerned about killing animals, you know, like vegetarians and that. It's just like, calm down, you know. It's just how it is. Lions eat other animals. Animals eat other animals, you know. It's just how it is, you know. Anyway, so these native emus, they might have to get a lot of them, might have to get killed, you know. In 1994, the Western Australian government sanctioned a cull in the Midwest region after... complaints from farmers, emus were gathering in large numbers along the fences. What the hell? The emus are just heaps of them hanging around on the fences. The emus are like, we're going to get across. They use words like, so I'll read the sentence again. In 1994, the Western Australian government sanctioned a cull in the Midwest region. Like, how confusing do you want to be, sanctioned a cull? Why don't you just say, in 1994, the Western Australian government organised a cull, organised to kill emus in the Midwest. Like, more direct, simple language. After complaints from farmers, emus were gathering in large numbers along the fences. They use lots of fancy words like sanctions and mandates and all these things. It's just like, say what it is, you know. Conditions in the area were dry and many of the emus have become trapped and starving. Well, that's what happens. Like, animals breed a lot and then they have to eat whatever food's around, and then if there's not enough food, that some of them die. It's just how nature is. You know, it's like survival of the fittest sort of thing. It's just Charles Darwin. It's just what happens, you know. You always have as many animals alive as you can sustain. You know what I mean? Like, when you leave things alone, you know, like, there's always going to be as many emus alive as is possible. And then, so, like, they might overbreed, and then there might not be enough food, so some of them will then die. And then the population will get a bit smaller and it will go back to being a bit big again. Then someone will die and then go back to being smaller and just fluctuates. And on average, it's always the right amount of... In one moment, it might be too many. In one moment, it might be too little. But on average, it's as many as the area can hold. In general, yeah. Volunteers were given permission to shoot the birds in a bid to prevent them from suffering. Oh, see, look at this. They're saying, see, people need to be given permission whether or not to kill an emu. It's just like, man, there's so many of them. Don't worry. Australia's got problems with camels as well. I don't know. You're so used to, again, this is where my reality is changing, you know. I'm so used to hearing this because camels aren't native, and camels and toads and rabbits, and just so used to hearing these foreign things coming here and just being a pest and being too many of them being a problem, and being like, don't, and then the same, you know, and the teacher at school, don't bring in the foreign animals or whatever, because they cause problems. And then we find out that our own kangaroos and our own native emus are problematic, you know, and it's just like some of our own native animals are problematic, you know, and it's just like, you just, it's again, to me, that's a bit of a mini jaw drop. Like, whoa, these foreign animals, these native animals are problematic as well. Like, I just thought, oh, I didn't think that makes any sense. Like, I thought that was, I didn't think they could be problematic, you know? Because the native, I thought the native ones always got along well. But it's just like, no. All right. Well, thanks for listening. It's been an hour, or well over an hour now. I read one article, and it's good. See what I mean? It started off a bit slow, but then I got into things, and it's amazing, huh? It's really good. You get one good article, and you can just go on and on and on. Anyway, I'll do the record-breaking one in like 2 months' time, but so let's see how it goes, huh? And yeah, well, that's it for me, Andy Nolch, the space cowboy protecting freedom for you and me. Nyeh-haw!